Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as
Disney villains that are clearly gay, like Sebastian from The Little Mermaid, that flaming guy from Hercules, Scar from The Lion King, Mushu from Mulan.
Yes!
Is Mushu the bad guy?
Mushu's he's a good guy. But he's kind of like a chaotic good, you know?
Yeah. He brings a lot to the story, but...
Also has flames.
Mostly his flamboyance.
Literally, flames.
What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's goody?
Nothing much here in the wonderful offices of Mr. Daniel Luna, who is the creator of Functional Series. Quick shout out there.
Thank you, Daniel. Shout out, Daniel.
And we are here with somebody very special today. I'm super stoked on this.
Yes. Go ahead and introduce yourself. You're beautiful.
Thank you. Yo soy de Rías, y yo soy de Pueblo, católico y gay.
Okay, that was smooth. That's your radio
that
voice.
Was rehearsed.
Yeah, I say that on my episodes.
Yeah,
and then sometimes it doesn't sound right, so I go back and I, you know, yo soy de Rías y yo soy de Pueblo, católico y gay. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound right. Yo soy de Rías.
I mean, you just heard us say welcome to Cabrón y Chingonas like 20 times. Yeah. So we get it.
Yes, you understand the struggle.
Oh my God, we're super stoked to have you here today and to learn all about you, because we know you from your podcast, we know you from the radio, we know you from this magazine that I have in my car right now, but we want to know you.
Tell us your whole life.
First of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan, and I'm super stoked to be here, so thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for being here. It means a lot to us, too, so we're honored.
So tell us, where are you from, and what was your childhood like? What were your traumas?
Oh, God. Sit down, girls.
Okay, this is going to be
a
long
story.
We're ready.
I was born and raised in a very small town, center of Mexico, called Encarnación de Díaz, Jalisco, widely known to the world as La Chona. It's a fun place. When I was growing up, it was way smaller than it is now. So I remember like a really small town type of upbringing, very humble, there wasn't a lot. We didn't have a lot. There was like two or three televisions in our block. Nobody had phones. There was like one phone in the whole neighborhood, where people that were working here in the U.S., they would call their wives through that phone. But I also had like a dual childhood where like for a certain periods of my life, we would come here to the States. You know, I'm sure work is what would bring us here. My parents work. And we would live here for a few months. And so I would go to school here, and then I would always go back for another, like, few months, a year or so. So it's back and forth a lot. So I feel like I have two identities, 100%. Like, I could totally be in El Rancho and fit in and live that lifestyle and get along just fine. And I could also totally, like, you know, talk to you about, you know, series that were on air here in the 90s and the music that was playing and the whole high school culture here in the U.S. So it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. Like, I'll listen to the Beach Boys and I get nostalgia, and I listen to Los Panchos and I get nostalgia. Hey. It's weird.
That's so cool. That's really interesting. I've never, like, I don't think I've ever met anybody that in their childhood like went back and forth like that. I've just seen somebody that like eventually had to make the change and then
right.
stuck to it.
Yeah, no, for me it was dual. And like, my mom speaks English, right? So in Mexico, at our house, my mom would speak to us in English. And we watch all the Disney movies in English and all that stuff. Versus, you know, people that they're growing up here in the U.S. and then they're hearing English in schools, and then in their home they speak Spanish. For me it was like the opposite, but in Mexico. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Sounds like it. So then at what point did you, I guess, end up here permanently?
When I was 17 years old, that's when we came back permanently to the U.S. And I was just about to finish high school, if I remember correctly. So I must have transferred here in my junior year. I was so mad because I just wanted to finish school with my friends over in Mexico. And, you know, it's just hard. It's hard to be you know, I was going through a lot at the time. I wasn't a popular kid at school whatsoever. Like,
look at you now.
No, what?
It's so weird for me to think about these things sometimes because I was a really shy kid. I had a lot of insecurities. I was a loner. I was a big loner. And the circumstances didn't help me because, you know, I was mad. I had all my friends in Mexico. You know, I was struggling with my sexuality. I was very scared about, you know, being gay and what that would mean. So I was just a very insecure little kid. So when we came here and I was a junior in high school, like, I didn't even have, like, the energy to make friends.
Yeah.
So I would go to the library during lunch, and sometimes I would just, like, walk around the school and just, like, hope that those 10 minutes or whatever lunch we had or recess would go over quickly. Like, I was a kid that was, like, just ring the damn alarm, you know? Like, I just want to go back to class, and I just want to end this misery. It was tough. And then because we were living in Orange at the time, I was going to Orange High School, my parents bought a house in Riverside towards my senior year. So it didn't even make things better. Like, it was just like, okay, now I'm kind of coping with this. I'm kind of giving it my best shot. And now we're moving again. And I just, at that point, I gave up. I didn't even try to make any friends. I didn't go to my prom. I didn't do any of the things that, you know, most kids do. And I just wanted to get it over with. But things changed when I went to college. My older brother was the first one in my family to ever go to college, but we're only a couple of years apart. So we were both kind of navigating that whole experience with a lot of ambiguity and a lot of questions. And then, I don't know, I started going through certain things. I came out to my parents. It just helped me out a lot. And that's when things kind of changed for me, and I found my passion, I think.
Which was what?
I'm a big fan of storytelling. You know, yeah. I love to tell stories, and I love to read stories, and I love to hear stories. I love to consume stories in every which way that I can. You know, I never thought that I would become a storyteller, but I'm so proud to be one. And I'm so proud to be able to have an opportunity to create something that is intangible. You know, like, I have friends that are in finance. I have friends that are in, you know, worlds where 2 + 2 = 4. It's not like that in our world. You know, we have the opportunity to create incredible things that nobody will see. And we're competing against people that don't create good content, but then they succeed. And our media is just not measurable in an equal way. And I think that that's the beauty of it, because you understand that the people that are doing it alongside you are just really passionate about it. We're definitely not doing it, one, for the money, two, for the success, because those are just so unattainable goals in our field that anybody that's doing it for that will probably give up in the first 2 weeks.
Right.
So I have a lot of respect for storytellers, because I do know firsthand that it's passion that drives it.
100%.
100%.
So when did, I guess, the medium of radio become, like, your way of telling stories?
Radio, to me, came in such a funny way, because when I was going to college, I wanted to be in TV. That's how I saw myself. I was a big news consumer when I was a kid. Like, I stopped watching cartoons when I was, like, 12.
Like, news or, like, Primer Impacto?
World News Tonight.
News. Well, isn't Primer Impacto news? I'm just kidding.
I mean, according to Los Spookies.
Right. Hey, when I was a kid, Primer Impacto was better quality than it is now.
That's true. Like, you know, back in the day, they were like, yeah, Harry Potter, el demonio, you know?
Una casa poseída en El Salvador.
There it goes.
Le contamos detalles.
Amazing.
No, it was, I would watch Channel 34 back in the day when Marielena Salinas and Jorge Ramos were the anchors of Channel 34, which to me is the golden age of what Spanish media has done here in the U.S. We had people that were really committed to the community. We had news outlets that were really focused on empowering and informing the community and not so much revenue driven at the time. And, you know, I was here for that. And I think I'm very lucky now to be working in those same offices and spaces where they were at one point. So when I was in college, I applied to an entry-level position at Univision, thinking that is my stepping stone to one day be on TV. But the entry-level position was in the radio portion. I was part of the street team. You know, you go out on the streets, you give out bumper stickers, you give out shirts, and entertain the listeners. And I just fell in love with radio. I just completely fell in love with radio. When I was a kid in Mexico, I've said this on the air a couple of times. I used to think that radio stations were like a living room. Mm-hmm. And there was a mic in the middle. Wow. And that all the artists were sitting in that living room, mm-hmm. right? And they were like, okay, va, Selena, it's your turn. Or, you know, el Buki is like, okay, ya voy yo. And he would walk That's up to amazing. The mic and they would sing.
You thought it was like all live all the time.
Yeah, I was like, man, I want to be in that room.
That's a talented ass singer that can sing it the same way every time.
Every time. So I never had an idea that, you know, I never knew what radio really was. I never knew that you could have a career in radio. You know, where I come from, you know, that there was no information. You know, there was no possibility of me becoming that. Nobody in my town had done that. So when I was exposed to it, I just fell in love with it. I always tell students, because I do a lot of public speaking, that I love it because it's the only media that doesn't have any visual attached to it. And that's why I love books, because I have a very powerful imagination. And, you know, to me, radio and what we do even here on podcasts and stuff, it's theater of the mind. You know, it's just using your voice and sounds to be able to captivate somebody's senses and interest and hopefully spark some type of reaction. And that, to me, is very, very powerful. I think it's a little lazy for people that use visuals. Ha. Just going to throw that out there.
I would probably
shade. Like,
yeah. I'm just saying, you know, you're telling your audience how to feel about everything and when to move, you know, their emotion with what you're showing them visually. And we don't have that luxury with audio. It's a very different ballgame.
I think it's also, like, very difficult to... Like, if you're doing a video without audio, without words, that's hard.
It's very hard.
So, yeah, that kind of goes both ways for me. But, yeah, you're right, yeah. I can see where you're coming from. It's definitely harder to capture people, right? Like, that's why podcasters have thousands of listeners, not millions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit, it's a lot more difficult.
But having said that, I respect anybody that tells stories. I just love the way we get to tell them with audio. It's, to me, it's a blast. And I do some stuff with visuals. I do some videos. Now that I'm in school again, I'm kind of taking some classes because I understand this whole concept of multi-platform storytelling. But I'll always hopefully, you know, have an opportunity to play with audio and I'll be happy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, now you are a radio host.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
It's so crazy. So I've done some radio gigs here and there. I started as a weekend on-air talent for one of our stations here in LA. I had a blast doing that. And then I had an opportunity to go to Vegas and be a jockey over there Monday through Friday, 3 to 7. It was also a blast. It was back when reggaeton was becoming a thing.
Ooh, okay, 2004.
2000-ish, yeah, like mid-2000s, I remember. Mm-hmm. They gave me the opportunity. They had just flipped these stations that used to be pop into more like urban formats. And I was there for 2 years. I remember, like, you know, the Daddy Yankees of the world and the Malumas. They were just getting started. J Balvin. So I got to interact with all of them in their early stages. But deep down inside, I was like, I want to go back to LA and be in pop. You know, like, I kind of like was like, yeah. Reggaeton is cool, but it's, you know, to me, it was a fad.
Yeah.
And I think, well, to a lot of us.
It did go away and then kind of came right back. Now.
Yeah. And I feel like it was reinvented in a more commercial vibe, right?
It's more pop now.
Yeah, 100%. And then I was working as a morning show producer for the station again here in LA, K-Love. And then I quit last year. I was like, I'm done with radio. I just want to move on. I want to go to school. I want to do other things. That's when I launched my own podcast. And, you know, 1 year later, long story short, they offered me the opportunity to be on a national show as a sidekick and also as a producer. Just a little background. The real popular radio stations here in the U.S. that are Spanish radio stations tend to be regional Mexican. It's the strongest music format that we have for Hispanic audiences. And I would always work in the pop format, except for that one time I was working in urban. And, you know, I always felt just very disconnected from the regional Mexican side of things and the lifestyle. I never really identified with it. But they offered me the position. And I was like, you know, in another time I would have 100% said no. But I've gone through such a personal journey of self-acceptance and self-discovery that you know, when it came to me, I was like, actually, I wouldn't mind being an openly gay man in a world that doesn't usually create spaces for people like me. And when they do, they tend to, you know, create cartoons or big stereotypes of people. So I had a conversation with everybody in the team and I told them, okay, you know, these are my, I'll do it, but I won't do it. I won't hide who I am on the mic, you know, and I'm definitely not going to be a stereotype. I'm just going to be myself, whatever that means. And if you guys are cool with that, then, you know, I'll give it my shot, my best shot. And they said yes. So I just started 3 weeks ago on as a sidekick and producer for El Freeway Show de la Bronca. I love her to death. We've been friends for years, and now we get to work with each other, which is amazing. And she empowers me. She empowers me, and I've been very open about who I am. And it's been an interesting last few weeks. And I don't know what's gonna come out of this, but I'm excited.
What do you hope to come out of it?
I definitely hope that I don't quit. That'll be a milestone for me. I hope that I learn to appreciate, one, the lifestyle, because in radio you have to be very genuine. And I really want to open myself to the audience that I'm now speaking to and really create content for them that entertains them, that informs them, and empowers them. And meanwhile, I obviously want to finish my master's. I want to continue to grow my podcast and continue to tell stories of people that are just like me and that struggled with the same things that I struggled. I'll be happy with that. However, you know, there's an opportunity for me to kind of grow into a more of a national platform as a personality. I'm just kind of starting to see what all that means, you know, with all the attention and the trips and the the photo shoots. It's very intimidating because deep down inside, I am a very shy, a very insecure young man. But I just don't want to be afraid, you know. I just feel like I was done with radio, and then this opportunity comes while I'm in this process of learning so much about myself with the podcast that I just don't want to be afraid anymore. I think for a big part of my life, I let a lot of opportunities go because I was afraid and I was insecure and I felt like I wasn't deserving of it. I just want to learn to just kind of give in to the situation, whatever it becomes. I'm just going to be there. I'm just going to show up. I'm just going to be myself, and we'll see where it goes.
You're fighting your imposter syndrome.
Like, yeah,
actively.
100%. But that's the thing. There's a big part of me that has always felt like an imposter. Mm-hmm. Always. When I went to Vegas, when, you know, and I was working in the urban format, when I got the chance to be a weekend talent for K-Love, I just always felt like, you know, and in my industry, there's a lot of people that look at people that succeed and they always say like, oh, well, yeah, he's so-and-so's friend. You know, he's so-and-so's friend. And that's why people get opportunities to, you know, to the perceptive eye, that could probably be true, but nobody, this is going to sound so cliche, but nobody knows the struggle, really. And there's a lot of struggle behind every story. And behind every type of success, no matter how you measure it, and behind every type of failure as well, there's a lot of struggle. And people sometimes miss that. So, you know, that struggle, it's also something that you're fighting with yourself. And I think I'm at that point where there's a big part of me that still feels like an imposter, but there's another part of me that's saying, like, well, maybe you deserve it. Maybe you should just go for it. Maybe you are the person to do this job, you know?
That's the person you listen to.
Yes. Take up space.
Right.
That's so important. And you're actively taking that space.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's intimidating. It's not easy.
Oh.
There's a moment every day when I'm just like, I could just go home and chill on my couch and not have to be pressured by all of this. And, you know, there's been moments when I'm on the air and the mic is on and I'm saying, you know, oh, I had a date last night with a guy and, or whatever, I was stood up by a guy last night. And as I'm saying it, like, I'm shaking because I understand that there's like 20 cities that are listening to this. And, you know, most of these people I've perceived to be homophobic before. So it's terrifying, but nothing's happened yet, nothing negative, so I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody's support.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
That's hella scary, but kudos to you. Shout out to you.
Thank you.
That's really brave.
So some of the questions that we kind of always ask our guests has to do with representation. Yeah. And like, as you pretty much just mentioned to us, you are now a representation for a lot of people on the radio. Like,
yeah,
you're providing that for queer people, queer brown people all over the world, and that's pretty amazing. But I still want to know, like, what was the first time that you saw yourself represented in any media?
If you did.
If you have. Because a lot of people, they'll say, like, hey, I still haven't really seen myself, other than myself, you know.
So let me tell you this story. And, you know, I would be very interested in getting your guys' reaction. Because I think there's a whole conversation going on right now, especially in queer spaces, about what it means to be a brown queer person, what it means to be Afro-queer, Afro-Latino-queer, and somebody that's white. In my personal opinion, there's a lot of divided opinions as to what kind of culture or habits you gravitate towards, right? For example, if you're a person of color here in Southern California, but you like to go to the Abbey, some people throw shade on you for that. It's like, no, why don't you go to like Latino spaces? Why do you go to people that are catering to mostly like white people and all that stuff, all those political kind of statements. The first time that I saw myself, or what I thought was myself, on television was Will and Grace.
Hmm. You're not the only one.
Yeah, I think Fabi said the same thing.
No, Luis did.
Luis
did.
Yeah.
He was on our pod.
Yeah. And now that I think about it,
Julio Salgado.
Julio Salgado. Yeah, I think now, you know, as you evolve as a person, as you grow in your own journey, I realized that wasn't really me. You know, maybe now I would tell you that there was a moment in time when I watched a Mexican film called Quemar las Naves. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
No.
It's an incredible story. That was the first time I saw myself in a character that was queer, because, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of queer people that were out, period. You know, whether they were people of color or they were white, whatever it was, there wasn't a lot of people that were kind of creating these spaces and these stories, and much less on open television. So Will and Grace, I remember watching that show and just thinking, man, you know? But then I can also tell you that the first, when I was watching Friends and they had the lesbian wedding,
oh yeah, I was that also episode kinda, that like they never wanted to air, that was like the least played episode,
yeah,
of the entire
I
series.
Love that episode.
But I remember the storyline, and I remember also kind of thinking, you know, obviously I'm not a lesbian, but I also felt,
I'm queer.
Yeah, yeah, I felt like, oh, there's an acknowledgement for people like me. But yeah, I mean, you know, fast forward to when I saw Quemar las Naves, which was probably maybe 10 years ago, and I'm 33, so I must have been like 23 years old. It was the first time that I saw a story about a person that was struggling with the same things that I was struggling. So there's a scene in the movie where these two guys, you kind of feel like the tension between them, and I know what that feels like, this unsaid but definitely implied sexual tension between two human beings, when you're terrified and you're scared of making a move and you're scared of who might see you. And then finally there's a scene where one of them kisses the other one, it kind of goes for it, and the other one reacts very violently and pushes him off, you know. And I saw myself in that person, because I know what it's like to kind of, I definitely want to kiss this person, I definitely want to experience that, but I also rejected it. You know, so that was the first time that I was like, whoa, that is me right there, like 100%. Plus, the backdrop to the movie was a small Mexican town, you know, and all the characters, you know, they seem to be like my cousins or my tios, you know, or even my parents. And that was the first time. That movie changed my life. To this day, it's one of my favorite movies. And I always say the phrase from the movie. They always say, ¿qué significa quemar las naves? So when Hernán Cortés came to the Americas, mandó quemar sus naves, so that none of his people would want to go back. And it means, you know, to kind of like be able to move on, you have to cut back with everything that's holding you to your past. And it's just so powerful.
That is deep.
Yeah.
That just hurt me a little bit.
Y'all right there?
Yeah. Damn. Go hide in the corner real quick. Yeah, that's good. I have to watch that movie now.
Sounds
that's
amazing.
I'm going to try to find it. I'm sure it's online.
Yeah.
It's not a big film. It's like an independent movie, but it should be somewhere online.
Yeah, definitely absolutely.
Must watch.
We'll put up
right
a link
up my
if
alley.
We can.
That's like, ooh.
So I guess you kind of answered both of the questions that we had, because we always ask, like, what's the first time that you saw yourself? And then secondly, like, what is the best representation? Would you say that that was your best representation, or have you seen better?
Oh, I created a better one.
Yeah, oh, there you go.
Yeah,
there
you are.
Yeah, the representation. I created the Pueblo Católico y Gay because I still hadn't found a space where... this is my interpretation of things. I feel like I came out in my household, my immediate family, my circle of friends. And then there's always kind of a comparison between gay people, right? Once they heard somebody else was coming out in the family, it was always like, oh, but he doesn't act like Eder. You know, he doesn't sound like Eder. And I always kind of hated that. And, you know, I always compared myself to the first few people, queer people that I met as well. So I created the podcast, The Pueblo Católico y Gay, because I really wanted to tell my story. I still felt that I couldn't identify with a lot of the people that I was meeting or going out with, because I am very religious, you know, funny enough. And I am a Catholic, and I understand that there's a lot of conflict, but it works for me. I can separate them both because I've, you know, I've been very close to the church since I was a kid. I've had an uncle that was a Franciscan friar, that is a Franciscan friar. Mm. My older brother was preparing himself to become a priest. So I've just always been very, I've always had very open conversations about the difference between faith and the difference between somebody telling you what faith is. So I can separate both. And I can understand that sometimes the homophobia that's coming from the church is from that individual, not necessarily the church. That's a whole different topic, right? But that's just a little bit of how I feel. And that's why I wanted to create a space, because I'm like, wait, there's gay men that we are religious and we come from a small town and we want to have a family. And, you know, we're not all a stereotype of, you know, over sexual, overly like liberal gays. And I just wanted to create a space where I could tell my story, but also people that are similar to me can tell their story and how it can be similar to mine, but also different from mine, because my story is not everybody's story. You know, I always tell everybody we are the most diverse minority there is. You know, normally minorities, they have a common thread and they share a similar background. Queer people, we're all over the place with identity, with, you know, socioeconomic status, with religious backgrounds. We come from all types of backgrounds. And that creates, I think, the divisiveness sometimes within our own community. It's so hard to understand each other. And sometimes when there's a character on mainstream media, then everybody wants to kind of apply that to us. And it's like, no, we're not all like that.
What does religion mean to you?
What does it mean to me? Mm-hmm. One, it means hope, you know, because I struggle with so many things and I have so many fears, and it gives me the hope. I believe that there's a more powerful being than me that kind of watches over me. I'm a big believer in angels. I always pray to my angels, and I believe that they also kind of watch over me. And, you know, like, just to give you an example, one of my biggest fears is to lose somebody that's close to me. That's never happened to me yet. I lost a best friend when I was in my 20s, but I've never lost like a sibling or a parent. I'm terrified of that. But I also, culturally, I've seen how religion pulls people from depression and allows them to kind of understand those passings in life. So that's what that's why I hold on to religion. It means hope for me. It means that when I have when we had that 7.1 earthquake, I was praying. My house was shaking, and I felt like it was going to be the big one because we just had one before on the 4th of July, the day before.
Yeah.
So when it came, and it was like, I think it was like more than 10 seconds that I was feeling it, I was like, this is it. And I was praying, you know, and that's, it gives me that. It gives me that comfort. Then I pray, and I feel like things are going to be okay. Maybe they're not. Maybe I'm being, you know, but it helps me.
That's really cool. That's really dope. Like, cause same, I'm saying this why I wear my San Judas. Like, it's like, like it's a cultural thing for me. It's like holding on to these traditions, holding on to my culture. So for me, it's like, I feel you.
It's family. It's like you're walking down the street and you see a mural of Virgen de Guadalupe and you feel like you just saw your
same.
Mom.
Same, yeah. You're just like, yeah. I feel home when I see something like that. And I feel safe when I'm near that, because it just reminds me of my family, of home, of this other place that, even though on the surface it seems like it doesn't accept me, literally everything about its teachings accept me.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
I feel that. Yeah. So who did you want to make this podcast for? Other than so that your story could be told, so you could be seen, what do you want to give to the world?
I wanted to give families, Latino families, something to kind of talk about. Because even in my own experience, you know, I came out, my family loves me and accepts me, and I'm very blessed to be and to have their support. But, you know, there's also been a lot of silence in my experience. Like, I've kind of lived my life on my own, and my family just kind of knows that I'm gay, but they don't really know what that means, you know.
I'm feeling seen.
We haven't had, a lot of conversations haven't happened yet. They've never met anybody that I've dated before. I've never dated anybody formally either. I've never had a relationship. I've never called anybody my boyfriend. So there's been a lot of silence. It's just like, we know, but nobody knows. And it would terrify me. It would terrify me because I'd be like, well, what if I meet somebody that I love? You know, what's that going to be like when I'm, if I ever take them home, or if I ever hold hands in front of them, or if I ever make out in front of them, things like that. And it was such a struggle for me, even though I came out of the closet 10 years ago, I still wasn't openly expressive with my best friends either. Like, I would just do my own thing on the side. And I realized that that put me in a lot of dangerous situations. You know, I was hooking up anonymously. I was on Grindr, meeting people left and right. And sometimes I would show up to people's houses and we would do what we would do. And then I'd be like, what the heck am I doing? Obviously, once the whole rush of like you being horny is gone, you can think rationally. And then you're like, man, like that was a very sketchy situation that I put myself in. And I felt like all of that was coming because I was still feeling like I had to live my life in the shadows. Like, I still had to hook up only when it was at night and in some alley where nobody would watch me. Because, you know, growing up, touching a guy's hand or being expressive towards a guy meant you were going to get your ass kicked. So, you know, as other people around my family started coming out, and I would see the lack of enthusiasm to just openly talk about it from my uncles, from my tías. They always just be like, ay, so-and-so came out of the closet. Yo no quiero saber. A mí no me digan, right? And I was like, I realized that if people understood what happens, what we go through, there would be a lot more sympathy and empathy, maybe. Not so much sympathy, but definitely empathy to our experience. And then we would have that support. And I started to read a lot. I realized how important family acceptance is to the mental health and the, you know, the possibility of having successful relationships to a queer person. And it just started to kind of dawn on me why I was doing the things that I was doing, even though I felt accepted by my family. But there was a big part of me that still felt like, okay, they accept you, but they don't want to see it. Even though nobody had expressed that, I was just assuming for them. So we were in Guadalajara with my dad, and we were having a conversation in the car. It was a very safe space. It was my older brother, myself, and my dad. And I don't know why the conversation came to this, but my dad said, you know, when you came out of the closet, I couldn't sleep for months. Mm. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I couldn't sleep for months. And I thought, wow, I never asked him what it was like for him, right? Like, I just kind of came out of the closet and I left, and I went to school, I graduated, and I did my thing. So then it brought it back home to me, and I was like, I've been through a journey, and there's still a lot of things that I haven't resolved, but so have they. And I want to know what that is, you know, so that we can help each other out. And that's the reason the first episode of the podcast is a conversation with my dad. That was the first time we talked about it. Mm-hmm. I told him, like, I want to talk about this with you, but I want to record it. Is that okay with you? And he was flaky at first. He was like, yeah, I'll go. And then he would always cancel on me. And then finally, once I had recorded the trailer and I had put it out on the internet, you know, he called me that weekend. He's like, I'm going to go Saturday and we're going to record. I was like, are you sure? Because if you don't want to do it, that's fine. He said, no, we're going to do it. He showed up. We recorded. We were both terrified. We were both very nervous. You can hear it. But it was beautiful to have that conversation and to kind of understand what it meant to him. And then now, because he's heard all the episodes of the podcast, you know, he also understands what it was like for me. And it just changes everything. Like, I know now that whenever and if ever I'm in love, that I'll be fine, that I'm going to be able to bring somebody home, and I'm not scared. And maybe this is, you know, stupid, but the podcast has been out for, a year now? Mm-hmm. It's been a year that I haven't had a hookup. It's been a year that I haven't been on Grindr. I just don't feel like that's what I need or deserve. And it's very powerful, because that's what it means to me. It means that I'm not afraid now of exploring something out in the open.
Look at that free therapy. Look at that.
It is free therapy. I'm telling you. All these people send me messages and you're like, you don't understand what it means to me. And I'm like, I do. Because it means, it's changed my life. It has been free therapy, 100%.
And another thing you do on your podcast is that you'll have, you know, parents.
Yes.
Of queer people. And yeah. I think that's really important, because your audience is not just queer people. It's queer people that have queer children. It's like this little olive branch of like knowledge and understanding you're trying to pass on to the community as a whole, not necessarily just queer folk, which is really cool.
I think a lot of us are very impatient with our parents, and we just want them to know the things that we've explored for years on our own, and it's unfair. So it's also important to understand where they're coming from. And when you hear and you just kind of take the moment to listen, it's so powerful to hear. One, we always, I feel like most of the time, we assume for our parents, right? Oh, they wouldn't be able to tolerate it. Oh, they wouldn't be able to understand it. But then when you really just sit down and have these conversations with these grown men and women, you understand that they've seen so much in their life. They know so much already. And sometimes the fear that they have doesn't necessarily come from a place where, like, oh, I want to reject my son or daughter. It just comes from a place of, like, what they've seen, what being gay meant to them. And it kind of still kind of bled through to my generation, because when I was growing up and I was in the 90s, I thought being gay meant I'm going to have AIDS. Mm. The first time I was tested for HIV, I was a virgin. And I was afraid it was going to be positive.
Just because I was gay.
Yeah. I was like, I'm gay, so it's going to be in me and it's going to come out positive. I remember I was terrified. It seemed like forever before I got my results. And when they said I was negative, I almost kind of couldn't believe it. I got tested again. Mm. That's how sure I was I had it in me. And it's stupid. It was just, you know.
It's just trauma, like, throughout a society. Yeah.
Those were the 90s, though. Like, that was, you know.
And the 80s. So anybody that was growing up in that time, you know, looks at the whole thing in a very different perspective. And then, you know, people that, like my dad, they were raised on a farm. Even though he was exposed to gay individuals at the time, what would happen to those gay individuals, you know, he probably thought would happen to me. He doesn't understand that I'm growing up in a completely different environment, thanks to his hard work, thanks to his, you know, courage to kind of uproot us to the U.S. And I get to be who I am. I am 100% convinced that if we would have stayed in Mexico, I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be doing what I am doing today. I'd probably be married and I'd probably have 2 or 3 kids. Mm. 100%.
Sleep in different beds, though. Yeah,
like. Yes, 100. Yes, that would have been in the contract.
That's so wild. Because I mean, what that conversation is with parents is really they just have a fear. You know, it's not necessarily, oh, you're gay. It's just like, no, like, I'm just scared.
Yeah, I'm scared.
Like, they grew up in different times.
I'm scared of your, you know, that you're gonna be attacked or murdered, or I'm scared that you're not gonna have, that you're gonna end up alone. You know how many people in my small town when I was growing up were alone? And those were the people that people would talk about being queer. Like, oh, es que él es gay. Oh, es que ella es marimacha. And it was like, oh, well, if I'm gay, then I'm going to end up alone like them. You know, because they didn't have any alternative to their life. It was always the people that would stay home and take care of their parents and or the church. Que dicen en la chona, te vas a quedar a vestir santos. You know, because you end up alone in the third age, so you just go and visit los santos de la iglesia and you kind of help out with that. It's just, you know, that's what they assumed it was. So it's kind of like retelling the story, telling them who we are, what we've been through, how much we struggled, so that they don't think, oh, you're gay porque escogiste ser gay. Oh, eres gay porque está de moda. Which is like, okay, God, yeah.
I feel like you've heard that.
100%.
Said directly to you. That's wild.
That's the craziest theory ever to me, thinking that, like, it's...
cool.
That it's trendy to be gay or genderqueer or whatever it is. Like, no, it's miserable.
My niece says it all the time. She's like, if I had a choice, like, I would not choose the harder route. Like,
exactly.
That's most people wouldn't, right? I mean, at this point, now that I've been through so much, like, for God's sakes, yes, I'm going to choose this route. But that's mostly, I mean, I've told the story before. Like, literally, like, I was homophobic until I realized I was gay.
Wow.
Like, it was just how I was raised and what I, like, everybody around me would say and the what I, you know, how I saw the world. It was just who I, or what I thought or whatever.
I'm sure you've told the story before, but how old were you when you realized?
Like, when I realized it, I was, like, 14.
Mm.
Yeah. And, yeah. And then I was gay, and then I was really upset about it. And
right. Yeah.
And then, like, years and years of unpacking that and unlearning a lot of horrible things that I was taught. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Years of it.
It's exactly that. I think you said the key word. It's unlearning everything that you perceived about yourself and that you were taught about people that, you know, were like you, and just kind of redefining that, and just kind of put, and also as you were defining it, it's putting it out there for the world to kind of walk along with you, and that way they understand, hopefully, you know, and hopefully we understand each other. And that's who my podcast is for. It's for us, but it's also for our family and our friends to just kind of have that resource.
I love that it's in Spanish.
Yeah,
that it's more meaningful than anybody can think, because I think there's a lot of people that maybe come to our podcast because they see the name and they're like, oh, a Spanish podcast. And I'm like, sorry, it's not.
It's like, our identities are deeply tied with these words, but also we don't, we're not speaking
but
Spanish.
But it's like, it's just, it's so, I don't know, it adds a layer of it, of a certain something to me for it to be in Spanish. Because you can put all these words and all these feelings that I've only ever had to explain in English, because I don't dare tell any of my, like, family, other than, I guess, I told my mom and my brother, but, you know, like, the rest of them, I don't want to tell them, and I definitely don't want to tell them in Spanish.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even know how. So hearing your podcast, like, really opens my eyes and, like, touches me in a certain way. Not a weird way.
Not in a weird way. Consensually.
Whatever way it is,
you.
I just hope it's a good way and it's an enjoyable way.
Consensual adult touching.
Yes.
In a welcome way. So I think that's really great.
No, thank you. I've struggled with that part of it because, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening to the podcast that are a little bit more English dominant. I have a lot of LA-based audience as well. So I struggle with it sometimes. I do have a couple of interviews that are coming up that are completely in English because the people that, you know, had to tell their story and wanted to tell their story, and it's an incredible, like, piece of the puzzle that I was missing in the podcast, they could only do it in English. However, all the other elements are there. You know, the very traditional family, the incredible struggle with faith and who you are. It's just some of us are growing with everything else that we had to go through. We're also assimilating to a different culture, which is incredible, right? So some of the episodes are now, I'm allowing them to be in English only when the language barrier is there, because the last thing I want is for somebody to not express themselves the way they feel comfortable. But yeah, it's mainly in Spanish, and I do it with that purpose. I just want my tia Lupe one day to pick it up and be able to hear it and be able to kind of connect.
Right. Yeah. I always think about that kind of stuff, like, because my mom doesn't talk about it. She probably never will.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what can I show her? Like, because if she hears something or watches something in English, like, she tunes out. She's like, I don't want to hear this.
Yeah.
But in Spanish, like, that could make all the difference. So sometimes I think about it. So I don't know.
It's connecting. It's connecting people. And it's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
Like, you show your tías or abuela, anybody. Another thing I really love about your podcast is that, like, there's a nuance, like you said. We're not all the same.
Yeah.
We're all different. We're different human beings. And that's what I love about your podcast, because we kind of exist in these spaces where everyone's kind of combating everything that you kind of stand for. And I love that you're standing in it, and I love that that's your truth and you're saying it. And I love that, because we're not all monolith. We're not all the same kind of queer, you know?
Yeah.
And we're all the same kind of, like, Latinx person. Like, how do we even begin to define something so huge?
And let me tell you something. There's such a power in sharing the stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. I mean, I've interviewed people that, you know, had no idea they were queer till they were, like, 22. And in my head, because of my experience, I'm always like, that doesn't make any sense. You know, I knew I was gay since I was, like, 3. How does that happen? I knew it.
I just couldn't. Like,
I was seven, I get it. Yeah, I get him.
I was seven. I had to literally like somebody for me to realize.
Right.
That. And I didn't even. I like somebody, but I didn't know it. I had to have somebody tell me, like, you like this person, and then literally, like, the word "no" was in my mouth when, like, it clicked in my brain.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I
was like, wait, did anything happen
with that person? Oh yeah.
Okay. Of course.
Like three years of. It was a roller coaster. Aww, I'll tell you
wait,
that.
That's beautiful though. You know, I wish if I could change anything about my past is I wish I would have been braver with my crushes back in the day, because I feel like I missed that whole part of my life, and now I'm like a 33-year-old man who is still crushing and kind of hasn't gotten over that puppy love phase. So I think you're very lucky to have experienced that.
Hey, all the highs come with a lot of lows.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
I think a lot of queer people can relate to that too, like that they kind of missed out on like being a teenager.
Yeah,
and they that's have a to kind thing of in the queer community, they have right? To live where, it like, out. You have your teenage years in your 20s. That's a yeah. thing, and mm-hmm. you don't. And you have your 20s and your 30s, and mm-hmm. we're like a whole decade behind because we are so repressed. 100%.
100%, and it sucks, you know. And you know, it, and you add that whole part of the conversation to the need of, you know, something like this or the podcast. You know, sex. Nobody tells you what sex is. To begin with, even if you're heterosexual, your parents just don't talk about these things.
Right.
So much less, nobody tells, you know, a little gay man what gay sex is. So, you know, my first sexual experience were, like, car crashes. Because I had no idea what I was doing, you know. And I had no idea what the possibilities could come of, you know, the body. And I just, it was terrifying. And it was part of that whole, like, you know, it was a struggle for me because it was like, well, this doesn't feel natural. This is not what I thought it was. You know, and it was part of that whole, like, I hate myself and I hate that I have to go through this. Why can't I just sleep with a woman like everybody else and everything kind of functions and everything has a purpose? You know, here I am trying to make miracles with my body. And it just, and I think that, again, puts a lot of us in unhealthy situations. It puts a lot of us in situations where we end up kind of hating ourselves and we end up hating the whole experience. And I just feel like there was nobody that I could talk to about this. I mean, I wouldn't even say it to the wind. I wouldn't even say it to the wind that I was gay. So nobody knew, except the people that I was meeting in hot alleyways. They knew.
Just them.
Just them. So, you know, I just want to talk about it. I want to talk about everything. I want... the same way that a heterosexual person gets to talk about and introduce their wife or their husband and, you know, their struggles and their sex life, and they have their, you know, circle of trust. I wanna create that for me, one, but for people that are like me as well, especially people that are still stuck, you know, south of the border or even north of the border, but in, like, communities where it's not... They don't have a lot of resources.
It's not safe.
It can be a U.S. problem, 100%.
100%.
Especially with people that are really, like, deep in the Catholic community mm-hmm. and involved with the church. Yeah, it's still here.
It's a hard thing to make peace with, too. You know, the religion and your queerness. That took me forever. And yeah. I just, you got to go through it.
Yeah.
You got to take your time with it, because it's just... I had a relationship with God, and then I had to make peace with that. Yeah. Like, I had to be like,
And, you know, whatever works. There's people that don't have a relationship, and it works for them, and I respect that 100%. Yeah. There's people that it works for them. There's people that it doesn't. There's people that have similar backgrounds but with other churches. Like, I watched a documentary by Ryan Reynolds, I think his name is. No, that's another guy. That's the hot guy from the notebook, right?
That's Deadpool.
What's the lead singer from Imagine Dragons' name? Dan Reynolds. Okay. Dan Reynolds. He has a documentary called Believer mm-hmm. where he explores the impact of the Mormon church within LGBTQ youth within the Mormon church in, like, areas like Salt Lake City, which tends to be predominantly white, I would feel safe to say. And it's just, when I watched the documentary, I was in tears because it's so similar. It's like, oh, you know, you just kind of change the location and you change who's ever on the, you know, altar talking, and it's the same thing for Catholic youth. It's very powerful.
I have not seen it or heard of it, but we should link it so people
can see
it. I
think, like, oddly enough, Salt Lake City has, like, a huge queer community.
Yeah. Well, that's where they host now. He hosts the Love Festival. Uh-huh. It's a music festival dedicated to embracing LGBTQ plus youth. Mm. And he organizes it not for profit. I believe. I don't read a lot about it, but I think most of it is donated to nonprofits that are working to help these youth. The work that he's doing is incredible, I think, you know, for his audience and for his community. And I think that we need more of that, especially for our community as well.
That's yeah. dope as fuck.
Absolutely. Well, we're going a little long, but before we end off, and before we give all your, you know, social media and everything where we can find you, I want to know, or we want to know, what are you watching? What do you watch? What do you consume, right? Even if it's like radio.
If you
radio,
have time.
Podcast.
Or yeah, any kind of media you're consuming.
I don't consume a lot of media right now because I'm so busy. But I, whenever I get a chance, I'm a big fan of One Day at a Time. I binge that one. And if I you're wearing the shirt. If I have time, I'll rewatch it because I'm such a fan. And my mom was the one that introduced me to that series, which I think says a lot.
Wow.
Because I think it was the first time that she saw something that she fell in love with on Netflix and was, like, wanting to share it, you know, with everybody. And it reminds me of my mom. So whenever I'm in my apartment being lame, I watch it and I get a little bit teary-eyed because I think of my mom. I love The Crown.
Oh, yes.
That's actually really, really good.
I am obsessed with The Crown, and I'm waiting for the third season while I'm rewatching season 1 and 2. I'm also a big fan of Forensic Files.
Oh,
and I know you guys.
It's off the wall there.
I'm not going to say a lot, but I'm just saying, if you guys ever need to hide a body, call me. Cause I know. I know what they look for.
We calling you first.
I know what they don't look for. I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's we're recording in early August right now. But I always just kind of like wait on the episodes till September. You know, there's a bunch on Netflix. There's close to 1,000 episodes. So there's a lot. And I just wait for September because it's the fall, you know, and I love watching it around Halloween season. And it's
like
I love it.
Thing
it's
for
it's
you.
My show 100%.
Love that.
Is there anything else that I'm watching? I don't think so. I think that's about it. I want to watch season 3 of Stranger Things. I haven't seen it yet. There's also a lot of people telling me to watch Casa de Papel on Netflix. It's a Spanish series. I forget the English title, but it's supposed to be incredible. And I haven't seen any of the seasons, so.
I haven't heard much about Casa de Papel. I've heard about Casa de las Flores, of course.
Yes,
and,
I watched that.
God, what is the other one? The Spanish one?
Which one? Oh, Cable Girls?
Yeah.
Cable
Las
Girls.
Las Chicas del Cable.
Las Chicas del Cable.
Before Las Chicas del Cable, there was an incredible piece. It was a one-season series called Costuras en el Tiempo, I think. I forget the English title, of course. And it's based on a book by María Dueñas. Costuras en el Tiempo, I think that's what it is. It's a beautiful, 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 beautiful cast, beautiful storyline, beautiful production. But they took it out, and then they introduced Las Chicas del Cable. So I was a little mad, so I never watched Chicas del Cable.
I stopped after a little bit. I was like, you guys are doing too much. I don't know why I got mad at them.
You got weird. Yeah, I'm not blaming you.
I was
you.
Like, okay.
Same.
You guys are going left field here.
Yeah, you're not missing out.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Tell the listeners.
Where can we find you?
Where can we listen to you? Mm-hmm. And not only the podcast, but on the radio and all that.
Yeah, so if, you know, I forget the cities that I'm on the air in, but it's you can find us on the Euphoria app in the LA station called 101.9 FM. We air in Los Angeles from 11 to 4, Monday through Friday. But I think in Chicago, Texas, New York, main cities, West Coast, East Coast or central part of the country, we air 3 to 7. So just kind of find the regional Mexican station in your city, and I'm sure we're on the air over there. If not, send us a message, and we'll make sure to kind of put the show on your city. It's a fun show. You guys are going to love it, and you guys are going to get to hear a very nervous me on the air. So save those audio things, because I'm going to get very confident very soon, and I'm going to sound very different. And you can also download my podcast, follow it, subscribe on Spotify, Apple, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. It's called De Pueblo, Católico y Gay. It's a Spanish podcast. It's a weekly episode podcast on Mondays. We always drop a new episode. And we're on our third season, which I'm so happy about. We just kind of put out a book with Kelsey Northridge, inspired by the podcast, which was also really cool. And I was a part of it as an advisor. And there's a lot of projects coming out. There's the magazine.
Yeah.
I was on a cover of Adelante magazine, which is a bilingual magazine that, you know, focuses on queer Latino Latinx men.
Okay, Mark, we see you.
The struggle with other lingo. Yeah.
I know. It's like I just got to say it right. And I'm that the reason for the cover was because I'm launching a column with them. It's going to be a monthly column. It's kind of a spin-off of the podcast. It's called Palabra y Omisión, which comes from the church prayer. Mm-hmm. Yo me acuso de haber pecado de pensamiento, palabra y omisión. But it's also because, you know, the things that we say and the things that we don't say are very powerful. So it's going to be a monthly column, and I'm going to talk about all sorts of things in that column as well. So you can find it on adelantemagazine.com every month. And yeah, if you guys feel like after all of that you still want to connect with me, you can look up my Instagram. It's at yo soy gorritas.
Hey.
And of course, we're gonna link all of it on our website and probably post about it on our Instagram at CYC Podcast or Twitter at CYC Podcast.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, definitely.
Y'all need to go follow him. You need to rate, review, subscribe. 5 stars only, y'all.
Yes, follow his podcast. For sure. And if you don't speak Spanish, like he said, he has English episodes for you now.
Yes. The English episodes. It's a really good Grindr episode.
Oh. Hey.
That I recorded in English because I was catfished on Grindr. I was heartbroken. It was horrible. But after I got heartbroken, the producer in me was like, bing.
This is a good story.
So I hit him up and I was like, I'm not going to tell you. I said, I blackmailed him to doing the podcast. I don't feel proud of it, but it's what I did. I said, I'm going to offer you the opportunity to come on the podcast and kind of tell me why you catfished me, because I'm sure a lot of people get catfished. And a lot of people are also afraid to show their face on Grindr because of the, you know, all the problems that could lead to them. I said, and if you do it, I'll let you be anonymous.
Oh, wow.
However, if you don't do it, I'm going to tell the story the way that I want to tell it. And I don't guarantee that you're going to remain anonymous.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. So I blackmailed him, I know.
Yes.
But he did the podcast, and I think it's a very powerful story that needed to be told, and I appreciate it. I appreciate him for doing it, and that's also in English, so look for that one if nothing else.
Yeah, that sounds like it should be on TV. That sounds amazing. Okay, great. Well, yeah, everybody go follow, everybody go listen, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
No, thank you, guys.
This is an amazing episode.
I am such a fangirl right now, and I'm so excited to have the opportunity to be here. And congratulations for everything that you guys are also doing as storytellers.
Thank you.
It's
thank
a very powerful platform that you guys have, and it's a very needed platform. So thank you for considering me to be here.
Absolutely. You're like number one.
Oh, yeah. Flew like, yes, all the way from Dallas for this.
I know.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.